because it's not about being finished. It's about momentum and it's about movement. And as long as you're doing something, then you're on the right path.
Welcome to the Little Gifts Podcast. This is Sue Ellen Parkinson.
And I'm her granddaughter, Savannah Wonderwheel. And we're on a journey together to find deeper meaning and magic in the day-to-day.
We're so happy to have you join us. Savannah, so good to see you.
You too. We've got another exciting interview today. I'm excited.
I'm so excited. And that's you, Charlie. It's such a thrill to see you.
It's good to see you too. It's just nice to be around familiar company.
Yeah. So we've got Charlie Kim, who is most notably to us, Grandma Sue's brother-in-law, basically. So that's why he's our very important person. But he's another one of these we've been kind of framing as extraordinary, ordinary people who isn't necessarily known by hundreds and thousands of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, but is really incredible in his field and with what he does, and has really committed to his art as just his livelihood and lifeblood, and is really inspiring to talk to. So Charlie Kim is a musician spanning many genres and disciplines. He was raised in the Western classical tradition of piano and has been singing in front of audiences since before being able to read. He performs regularly with performing arts organizations like the Los Angeles Opera, Los Angeles Philharmonic, Los Angeles Master Chorale, and also serves as conductor, music director, and teaching artist. His voice can be heard on film and TV in things such as The Marvels, Tiger's Apprentice, Muppets Mayhem, Star Wars Return of the Jedi. He also serves as a cultural liaison to the City of Los Angeles Department of Cultural Affairs and represents the artistic interests of his community through his leadership with the San Fernando Valley Master Chorale. And we are so excited that you came on to talk to us and that we get to hang out with you for an hour.
I'm excited too. It's weird hearing you say all those things. I'm like, who is this person?
Who is this amazing person with all these accolades?
Oh, Charlie. So I'm a little groggy this morning, but the first thing that I wrote down in my notes about things I wanted to talk to you was holding on to your dream. And I put it down in bold. Because I know so many artists, musicians, poets, writers who are gifted and kind of because the world can be fairly brutal to sensitive people who enter wanting to give their gifts, and sometimes their gifts aren't received, but then they go on to do other things. But I always sense this emptiness or longing to come back and hold on to their dream. And when I've known you for about 15 years now, and it seems like as soon as you got out of the, even before you were out of university, you were just hit the ground running and won't let go. You won't let go of that dream. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about that, start there, and your process and what's compelling you, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know if I've checked in with that question in a long time. I mean, if I were to put it concisely, I just don't know what else I would be doing. It's certainly not a lone effort. I mean, there's a lot of support from different people and areas in my life. And when I have moments of doubt, something just enough to keep me going keeps coming into my life. And so I think I'm following this trail of, you know, hope that, and, you know, honestly, I don't even know what it is that I'm trying to arrive at necessarily, but I'm asking myself more and more what is where the arrival point is. And I'm trying to look at my life as, you know, all those things that they say about it's about the journey and you need to enjoy yourself along the way and, you know, don't miss things, the important things along the way. But it's hard to not compare. I have a lot of colleagues, you know, that we've all been doing the same thing. And everyone has varying amounts of success, and it's hard to keep blinders on, but I think that's an important just thing to keep in mind as you're trudging along. But I'm finding that I'm not alone, certainly. I just went to hear, my sister and I went to go hear Pasadena City College's symphony performance, and the conductor started the whole performance by saying the road to studying music is unique and it's not laid out in any way. There's no blueprint. And most of the time you feel like you don't know what you're doing. And I just stared at him, just nodding like, oh my God, there's somebody else in the world that like knows this feeling. And then I see everybody, I mean, not everybody, but there were other people really invested in what he was saying, including the people on the stage. And I was just like, I was in awe because I just, for the first time in a really long time, I didn't feel like I was the only one clawing my way forward. And, you know, I said, when after hearing my own bio, I was like, who is that? Because it doesn't necessarily feel like all those things have happened. It's one thing at a time. And it's really, like I said, it's like someone just dangles something in front of you. Like, if you do this one thing, then it might get a little bit easier. But then you turn around and look back and realize you've done that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, oh, okay, I guess I'm being used in some way. And there's, God, I could go on and on. But, you know, my mom would say, it's not about you making the music. It's about the music going through you. And that's taken off a lot of the pressure, because if it all depended on me, I would have given up a long time ago. But seeing how people enjoy it and how, you know, I work with students a lot, and seeing how music affects them kind of gives me motivation to keep going, because it doesn't take much for someone's life to like change by one degree. And then later on down the road, it makes a huge difference.
Can you give an example of one of those things where people say, if you just try this, and then things started to shift?
Oh, so many things.
What?
Well, okay, so this, I conduct a community chorus on my side of the hill and in San Fernando Valley. And I was actually looking for a job at the time. I had just left a post as a church music director in Ventura. It was a great job, but I could see the power of the music empowering the dogma that I didn't necessarily stand behind. And I felt like the music, I could channel my energy somewhere else. And it was really scary for me to leave that job because I didn't have anything lined up. And so I was looking for anything else. And I actually didn't get the job, but the lady said, I sing in a community chorus that's looking for a new artistic director. Are you interested? And I really struggled with it because it didn't pay and I was looking for livelihood, but it did present an opportunity to meet people and just to like have some kind of visibility in the community. And so for that reason, after a lot of thinking, I decided to take it. And the thing I was thinking at the time was maybe this will lead to something more substantial. And so I took a gamble, and it has put me on a course. It's come in and out of my professional life to help in certain ways, because when I meet other people, they know, oh, you conduct this choir. And like during pandemic, for example, I think we were really prolific. We figured out how to video engineer, you know, 40, 50 people's singing videos onto one video. And it was by force. I didn't take a class. I didn't do anything. I just said, okay, we have to figure out how to do this. And some of our best work ended up coming out of that. And as a result of that, a lot of people saw what I could do from behind a screen. And it did open up certain doors. I can't say it was very direct, like, oh, because I saw this, I'm going to give you this job. But it certainly helped. And it's like, it's not a linear thing. You put stuff out into the ether, and then somewhere, somehow, somebody, you know, finds you, and then out of the blue something will happen. But you know, that was an example of something that I pursued, even though there wasn't anything necessarily concrete on the other side of it. I'm glad I did, and I'm not going to say I doubt the decision, but I still, after how many or 7 years, have moments of like, should I keep doing this? You know, so I'm constantly reevaluating, but I'm glad I did, because I met really good people. And what I get out of it is I have an opportunity to fulfill my own artistic desires and concepts. And I get to just try things without anybody kind of breathing down my neck. And I think I need to evaluate that a little more now that I think about it.
Yeah.
As somebody who just joined a community choir in January for the first time of doing like any singing, anything ever, I cannot tell you the gift you are giving to those people by being there for them to like have a space to do that. It's it's been so amazing. So
that is so cool.
It's been really great. But I just think our director's name is Rebecca. And, you know, we say thank you, Rebecca, and give her the cards or whatever, but I don't really know if she knows how much she's giving to people by doing that work. And so I'm sure it's the same for you and the people in your choir. But I just also feel like I need to say, kind of going back, when you were at the show the other night and the man was talking about how he's feeling like he's kind of dragging himself along, and you're like, I was nodding, and there's people in the crowd nodding, and then me and Grandma Sue are nodding, and I'm sure so many people listening are nodding, and whether it's in the music industry or not. I just feel like in more of the creative and non, you know, quote unquote, normal work environments, that's so the case for all of us, is just being like, am I doing this right? Am I going the way I'm supposed to? This person seems like they're further ahead than me, and whatever that means. And if you talk to them, I'm sure they feel like they're looking at somebody else who's further ahead than them. And so I think it's just such a good reminder to kind of every once in a while be like, I am just going to put the blinders on and kind of stick with my path and trust that the steps I take are going to lead to something else. So.
Well, the culture doesn't support these decisions of the heart.
No.
And what I am tuning in on, Charlie, when you talk about leaving that job, that the steady income in Ventura conducting at that church, is that they weren't going with your value system, and your own spiritual value system was more than money on some level, you know, and that we applaud when we hear these stories of people who are established and they're making really good incomes. But when you're struggling in doing that, or just getting by and doing that, then it's hard to find those support systems. Yeah. But what I think of is that the music you create is transformative, really. You know, it's so beautiful.
We did a lot of good things at that church. I can't say that it wasn't artistically fulfilling in its own way. There's an English congregation and a Hispanic congregation, and you know, one of the things we did was around Day of the Dead and All Souls Day. You know, there was a little bit of a disagreement about, you know, they wanted to do like one large community ceremony where they honored the ones they'd lost that year, and no, people were disagreeing about the music. And so I came in and I suggested classical music, because neither side seemed to be aware that there were these beautiful settings of the words that they say every Sunday set by these great masters. And I said, you know, why don't we make it about this feeling instead of trying to represent, you know, my culture or your culture. And it ended up working out really well, and they ended up becoming amenable to each other. And then they started talking about, let's do this part in Spanish, this part in English, this part in Latin. And it ended up being a really beautiful thing. And it's one of my proudest moments, because once you take the focus off of yourself, things tend to unroll and relax. And I haven't seen an example like that in a long time. But the reason I left is because humans are humans, and people were getting up onto the podium talking about politics and pro-life and all this. And I was like, that is not what the pulpit is for. And, you know, they're human too. And I just kind of realized, like, I felt like I was meant to reach a different group of people at the time. And so, but the funny thing is, I didn't know what was coming. And then I got a world tour with LA Master Chorale, and it ended up being about one of the most spiritual subjects in my life. And that is irony, but I just didn't know what to expect.
Well, tell us about that spiritual.
It's been a long journey. I'll give you some context. I grew up in a really strict sect of Christianity. I was raised Adventist, Seventh-day Adventist, and it's pretty Judaic from Friday night sundown to Saturday night sundown. Now that I'm older, I understand that it's not about the things you can't do and more about what you're, you know, time for quiet and things like this. But back then it felt like I wasn't allowed to do this and this and this. And there were certain things I couldn't eat, and I couldn't perform from Friday night to Saturday night at sundown. And that shaped my worldview, because I had to come out of the closet under those terms, and my family had to reconcile the whole thing. And so there was just a lot of turmoil around the way I was raised. And I even was going to go to a university, an Adventist university. I went for 1 year, and I was very rebellious, so I got in a lot of trouble. And I ended up lasting 1 year. I'll tell you that story sometime. But so I had a really anti feeling with religion, and I wouldn't even entertain the idea of spirituality just because I wasn't ready for it, I think. But being a musician, you have to take jobs in whatever denomination you're hired to work for. So I'd say I was Catholic for hire. I was like, you know, Jewish for hire, or, you know, Scientologist for hire, whatever. And I did that for a really long time. And the sermon would come around, and I'd just like sit there and like block it out because I didn't even want to hear it. I wasn't even open to it for years and years. And then, you know, I was really confronted with the spirituality when I worked at that Catholic church. And then when I left, it was to sing a piece called Lagrime di San Pietro, which means the tears of St. Peter. And it was written by a guy named Orlando Di Lasso, based on an epic poem about Peter's denial of Christ. There's a story in the Bible where, you know, Christ says, when the time comes and my friends are supposed to stick up for me, you are going to bail on me three times. And after the third time, a rooster is going to crow. And Peter keeps denying it. He says, oh, I'll be there for you. And he's very boastful and just strong-headed. He says, there's no way I would leave you. And then you watch the three denials happen, and then the rooster crows, and Peter just crumbles. And as Jesus is being taken away by the police to be killed, Peter looks into the eyes of Christ, and he's smiling. And this poem takes place at that moment where Peter is looking at Christ being dragged away, through Peter dealing with Christ's death, and then well after the fact and living with his regret and shame until he dies. And most of it is in Italian. There's 21 movements, and 7 parts, as was typical back then, sing polyphonic music, which is basically everyone is singing their own melody instead of like one person singing melody and then everyone else singing chords. So it's like very complicated. And then the last movement is in Latin, because it's the words of Christ himself. But it changed my life, because if I were to show aliens what human shame is, I would show them this. This is shame. And like, it also, it taught me a lot about
interesting.
It just made me look inside and really made me reconsider the way I handle conflict. And it changed my relationships with everybody in my life. And it made me go from being reactive to, when things would happen, before saying anything, I would look inside and say, okay, what can I do to make this better? And that thought never occurred to me until I encountered this piece. But so I left the church job to take this tour, and we ended up going Paris, London, Salzburg, Austria, Germany, and then several places in the United States. And then we were in New Zealand for the Auckland Music Festival. And that was when news of the pandemic came out. And I was actually in the middle of a rainforest, like standing under a waterfall. And then when I came out and I checked my phone, everybody's checking their phones and saying, we lost all of our work for the next year. And it took me a long time to realize what was happening. But I love saying that when pandemic happened, I was in the middle of a rainforest. And also, I'll never forget when they welcomed us to Auckland, New Zealand. There's this tradition. There's this big ceremony with the delegates and like also the Maori people. And you're supposed to touch foreheads and share breath. And there was this big ceremony where we were supposed to do this. And that morning we found out about COVID and everything. And so we were like terrified, but we ended up doing it anyway, but it was a real leap of faith. But so that the Tears of St. Peter really, it literally took me around the world inside myself, but also physically outside. And then pandemic happened, and then nobody had work. So I didn't have to worry about having a full-time job for a while. And then it's like, honestly, I feel like the pandemic situation happened like just in time for me, because I was so panicked about what I was going to do next. And everyone was kind of just forced to stay in and figure it out. So I was like, well, we're all in the same place now, so I can be creative. And so that's when I started making a lot of videos and figuring out what I liked, and it helped me find my strengths. But it was definitely that leap of faith, leaving the church, that like freed me, I guess. But I couldn't have ever guessed that things were going to turn out the way they did. but I had to go for it anyway.
I love life, the way that happens, that you would be like, here's this religious institution that I'm so not feeling a connection to. I'm going to leave that and go with this like bigger thing. And then to have that lead into spirituality is so incredible. Just it's like a giant cosmic prank that's so amazing.
It makes me laugh when I think about it. I'm like, that's cruel.
Good one.
Yeah, I know. Ha ha, you got me.
Well, I wanted you to tell us a little bit about the Los Angeles Master Chorale too, because I am so impressed with them as an organization and the amazing work that they do in the broader community. Sure. Yeah. Like the high schools, working with the high school students and all that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. I also admire the organization. So LA Master Chorale is one of the, I guess I would say, premier municipal forces. I'm realizing now larger cities usually have a symphony, a theater company, and if they're lucky, they'll have a choir and a dance company. And so LA is lucky to have all of these forces. Whenever the symphony needs a choir, they use LA Master Chorale. So they have their own concert series, and they have a strength in playing to the community and uplifting voices that are not traditionally praised in a big way on that stage. And they also have really extensive community and education. For the community, they do things like just putting a band on stage, and they'll just, you know, have songs like Disney and the Beatles, and, you know, and they'll have some choral music, but we'll just go out into the park and they'll hand out words and someone will MC and people will sing along, and they have food trucks and they try and make it fun, and they really try and, yeah, it's cool. They try and bridge the gap between that big elite stage and like listening to music, you know what I mean? Because if it's about the music and they understand that. So if all they have to do is expose people to it, and then they'll come. So they do stuff like that. And then in the classroom, crowning jewel, I guess, would be the high school choral festival. They do a lot of stuff, but one of the bigger ones, they gather, I think this year it's about 24 high schools. They pass out the music to everybody, and they hold a festival at the end of the year. It's actually happening in a month. They just had their first rehearsal with all the high schools together. I saw a picture. And it's powerful. There's literally thousands of high school kids all in their respective choral uniforms in the hall. So you can see like blocks of red and blocks of blue and see the different schools. But they all work on the same music. And it changed their lives, because I don't think any of them, first of all, have ever been to their city's hall. Like, I don't think they realize that this is their concert hall. They live in the city of Los Angeles. They have to know that they have this available to them. So they do a really good job of exposing the kids to what their tax dollars are theoretically supporting for them, that they need to take advantage of this. And they come and they make music by the thousands. And, you know, for them to feel, it's so hard to articulate, but to feel like your voice matters in a sea of thousands of people, that you're contributing to the same thing. I think Eric Whitaker, famous American composer, says, you know, when singers are in a room singularly focused just on breathing at the same time is immensely powerful. And then to sing the same note, thousands of people, just the one note without any words, is powerful in its own way. And then everybody sings their own note, and then it just becomes this illustration of teamwork that you can't learn in the classroom. And they walk away and they never forget it. And I'll run into people at Starbucks and they'll see my shirt and say, oh, I did the choral festival 10 years ago and it changed my life. And big ways, small ways, I don't think you necessarily have to go into music, but they have that memory for the rest of their lives.
Well, I've seen some video. The kids just look absolutely lit up. They look so happy. And it seems like it's so empowering for them.
Well, and I think one of the things that's so amazing about, whether it's like choirs or symphonies or any of these things, or even like dance troupes, and I think it's just so amazing, these things that bring all these people together and help build community. Because, I mean, the whole loneliness epidemic for everybody, but especially children these days, is just so horrible. And so giving them a space to be together in groups and feel the power of like how amazing it feels when you are doing something with so many people. Because I feel like we're so taught to be like, well, you have to be the best. It's all about your journey all alone and this thing. And so to kind of strip that away and be like, no, something so beautiful and powerful can come out of this thing where everybody's together and it doesn't necessarily make you feel like you're less than because you're not the only one doing it, but it makes you feel stronger because you have all these people around you doing it together is such a good lesson. Kids and adults.
absolutely.
I'm at this point now where I'm like, everybody should join a choir because it's taught me so much. I'm like, I feel like it'd be so good for everybody to do. It's now I mean, I'm like, everybody needs to be in therapy and everybody needs to join a choir.
I mean, that's how I feel about it. But just like you said, I think at the beginning of all of this for me, it was definitely about how far I can go. And it's really debilitating because no one can go that far on their own. And the word community has changed meaning a lot for me over the past few years, especially recently. And the investment in the community course that I agreed to, you know, lead all these years ago is only just now starting to reveal its value to me because I'm ready, I think, for that word community. And I'm seeing what everybody is getting out of it because these people keep coming back and I'm like, what are you getting out of this? You know? And so I have this really harebrained idea about unifying the performing courses in the valley where I live because there's no organized structure. And so the music center downtown with the big groups, LA Phil, LA Master Chorale, as I'm learning the history of those groups, it was like one person. It was like two or three people. Now, granted, they were very wealthy, or they found the right people, but someone decided that it was important for these people to collaborate and communicate. And so I just kind of wondered to myself, like, the Valley is 1.5 million people. There's, I'm going to say, three, if not four, higher learning institutions. They all have choirs. There's several high schools that have really strong choral programs in the Valley. And if all we have to do is organize and unify, then there's no reason we can't have the same thing on this side.
Yeah.
What is it? You know, if you build it, they will come. And there's a venue down the street from where I live in Canoga Park that, funnily enough, used to be a porn theater. I don't know.
Oh my God. So I have to say, I just have to pause you. We have down the street from me in Portland, there was an old porn theater. It was like for years and years and years, it was up and running. I think it closed not that long ago.
Hilarious.
And then the building was just kind of sitting empty for years because they were like, nobody wants to touch this place. Like, who the hell knows what's inside?
Literally.
It was like terrifying. But the Portland Art Museum just bought it. The Portland Art Museum bought it, renovated it, and it's this gorgeous building, turns out, who knew? And now it's specifically a theater. They're showing local short films, local documentaries. They're highlighting different small indie documentaries and artists, musicians. And it's been really incredible how much that has become a community space now. It's only been open for about 6 months, but it's like already gotten a lot of at least neighborhood attention. And the stuff they're showing there is just really incredible and not stuff you see anywhere else. So do it.
That's amazing. That is so inspiring. And I mean, like, see, and that was like one person. I mean, I'm guessing, but like, you know, that someone decided we could do this, you know? And so, oh my God, I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah.
This theater has already been bought by the city. So the city owns it. And so I'm just beating down their door like, we need this.
Yes.
And we use this. So it's rolling and they're renovating it. It's shut down for renovation right now and it'll be open again in 2025. And things are happening. And I'm in the conversation about who gets to perform there. And so I feel something slowly happening. I'm happy to hear your story about the theater in Portland. And I'm not crazy. It can happen, you know, and so.
You're not crazy. And everybody, so many people thought that it was crazy. Everybody was like, what are they doing with this place? Like, really? Like, the art museum needs, like, its own separate theater? Like, what is happening? And now it's totally been a success. So you're not crazy. And it can work out.
I love that. There's that little bit of hope again that like gets to, you know, that like maybe if you do this, You know, and yeah. So I'll just try for the next thing.
Well, there was an old building in the town of Willits where I live that was unused for years. And a friend of mine who's an artist was walking by and she went up to the city and said, you know, can we turn this into an art center? And they kind of hemmed and hawed and she, you know, anyway, to make a long story short, 20 years later, we had an art center and it was completely transformed by community. Beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah, it can happen.
So it can happen.
Yeah.
I needed this.
Good, good, good. Oh, I guess I'm just curious. I always like to hear, like, especially artistic people, if you had one little nugget of advice to give to somebody who is like, I want to be doing something artistic and I just don't know where to start. I don't know how to make the shift. I don't know what to do to even begin to tap into, like, that side of myself. Would you have anything to tell them?
I think I would say to be brave and to start, because it's not about being finished. It's about momentum and it's about movement. And as long as you're doing something, then you're on the right path. It doesn't have to be doing the right thing necessarily, but as long as your juices are flowing, then the rest just kind of happens. And, you know, faith is a big part of it. You have to know that it's going to be okay. And that when the moment comes for you to, if you're thinking about like switching careers even, or jumping in that way, to know when is tough, but just know that when the moment comes, something inside you will tell you, you know, it'll get to a point where you're bothered until you make a move. And, you know, something inside you will tell you that you have to listen to the voice inside. And, you know, blinders also help, you know.
Blinders are super plugs. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't compare, and you know, you're gonna hear discouraging things, but that has to fuel your forward motion. Just don't get stuck. That's when you feel stuck, just do something and the next turn will come. That's gotten me through a lot. So
I love that. That's great.
Keeping your eye on the prize. Yeah.
Yeah. Just move. Move.
Yeah, I found it's really interesting. Even some of your best friends and family members will say things that are discouraging just because I don't know why, but it's true. You know, you just have to really just kind of learn to filter out all that stuff.
Yeah, I think sometimes in my life, some of the most arresting things have come from the ones closest to me. And yeah, I guess, you know, especially at first, it's hard to block that out, but you callous, you know, and I think that's a part of the process, you know.
And anybody, so if there's anybody in the San Fernando Valley, that's where you are now, right?
Yes.
You also do voice lessons, right? And obviously work in all these fields of music and choirs and everything down there. Is there somewhere people can find you and find out ways to work with you if they happen to be down there and want to find their way into some music?
Yes. Go ahead and go to sfvmc.com, as in San Fernando Valley Master Chorale, and just go to the website. And we're also on YouTube. And, you know, if you want to join us, just fill out the little inquiry on the page and then you'll start getting the emails and you'll know when rehearsal is. And it's not an audition-based choir. Just walk in and see if it's for you. And but we're here and we're ready to receive you if you want to come sing.
Yeah,
and we'll see you at rehearsal.
Oh, well, I think that's a lovely note to kind of end at least that part of the conversation on. I think you can guess what's coming since you've listened to a few of these. we're going to do our little gifts.
Oh, yes, so, yes.
Charlie, do you want to kick us off? Just something that's been a little present from the universe. Big, small, whatever.
This was a big one. This was a big one for me. A lot of my performing recently has been service of others. And I think I literally said out loud, wow, I need to get on stage again, like for myself. And then like maybe 3 days later, a friend pushed something on me and said, hey, you need to audition for this. And I said, no. And then I got pushed again. And then I submitted and got the show and I took it. And it ended up being one of the most cathartic experiences I've had in a really long time. And it was exactly what I'd asked for and what I needed. And through the whole process, I just kept awe. Like all I said was, I would love to get on stage again. And it like happened in a matter of days. And things like the more I lean in to putting stuff out into the ether, the more I'm feeling it. And so I'm trying to keep going in that direction. And so I feel like I got like a huge nudge from the universe. Like, yes, this is how it works. So I'm seeing the world with different eyes and I feel refreshed. And it was a really good thing for me.
Wonderful. Love
that.
I just went to a memorial last night. It was very small, probably less than 12 people, sitting in a circle talking about my husband's sister who died about a month ago. It was great to be there with Gary, my husband, and when he was talking about and telling stories about Margaret, he broke into tears at one point and just said, you know, I'm still trying to please my big sister. And I just have to say there's something so tender and wonderful about seeing a man cry. We need to see men's tears more in the world. And as soon as he did that, it gave permission to the entire group to really express their deepest feelings. And it, that was a gift to me and everybody in that circle, I think.
So sweet. I love that.
We should see more men's tears.
Yeah.
The world would be a better place.
Oh, that's so, touching. I guess, let's see, mine will be, so one of my dear, dear friends, Summer Hatfield, for anybody in Portland who wants to get a tattoo, she became a licensed tattoo artist. And, you know, she's one of these people who is an artist and has done a million things and is always kind of trying to find the next or the thing that's going to be supportive of her being an artist, but actually make her able to make a living, and, you know, has done a bunch of different tendrils of it. But she's really like getting her feet underneath her in this. And I was able to get a tattoo from her. That's a big peony tattoo that I've wanted forever. We have a special connection to peonies in my family. And so I was just so pleased we're doing a trade too, which I always think that's so special when you can trade services and give each other something like that. But just to be able to get to wear one of my best friend's art for the rest of my life, I'm so excited. And I just am so proud of her. And it was just so lovely to get to just be, she just kind of stuck with me for 5 hours as we're doing this thing. And so just to have that time to really sit and talk and reconnect and to see how far she's come and to kind of see her doing the thing of, I feel like a little bit how you were talking about, Charlie, of just being like, well, I don't necessarily know if this is quote unquote like the best next thing to do, but I'm feeling a draw to do it, and seeing it kind of starting to pay off for her is really, really special. Yeah.
That's good.
Oh, well, thank you so, so much for taking the time to be with us on a Sunday morning and getting up early. And it's really, really appreciated. So,
I was very, very honored and happy to be in such good company. And you guys are so brilliant, and the things you pull out of people and the points you're making are really uplifting and thoughtful. And I'm just happy to,
yay,
like,
thank you for being an extraordinary ordinary.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, I love you, Grandma, and I love you, Charlie, and we love everybody listening.
Love you.
Love you too.
If you enjoy this show, and I'll assume you do since you're listening, please rate and review us on Apple and Spotify. It would also be amazing if you could tell your friends and family about it. Word of mouth recommendations are the best marketing a podcast could wish for. To keep in touch, you can find us on Instagram at Little Gifts Podcast, or you can send us a note at littlegiftspodcast@gmail.com. Every love note we get makes our day. And if you feel inspired to share, we would be so excited to hear about the little gifts that have shown up in all of your lives. To see or purchase Sue Ellen's artwork, you can find her on Facebook and Instagram at sue.ellen.parkinson. You can also visit her website at sueellenparkinson.com. Our music is by the talented musician Robin O'Brien. Big thanks to Robin. Please subscribe to our show and go ahead and leave us that review while you're at it. Thanks again, and we'll be back next week.